very long time. We're up to Pasuk Yud Aleph. Pasuk Yud Aleph is Meshoich Chaschel Liyodecha, page 324. 324, Meshoich Chaschel Liyodecha V'tzidkoschel Liyishrelev. Meshoich means to draw. To draw Chaschel. It is very interesting over here that there's a very unique expression. David over here is davening to Hashem and begging Hashem to, now we would say bestow, to bestow kind. Well, I'm sorry? Mishoich chastecha liyodecha. Now, what does that mean exactly? We like to think about what kindness is. You know, to create. You know, Hashem. You know, just do it, create it. Or you think about kindness is to give. There's money in the bank. Can't you write me out a check, a slice? Over here, there's a very unique word. Meshoich means to draw, to just bring forward. It's like, you know, if you ever did safras, anyone ever experienced in writing Sifrei Torah in Stam, in the old, I mean, you know, it doesn't have to only be Stam. How did they write in ancient times? And still, it's the same thing. How do you write today? When you write on with a quill and with an inkwell, Meshoich chastecha. Okay. When you write, what do you do when you write? What you're really doing is you're putting ink, you're dropping a blob of ink on paper, on parchment, and then you use the coolness to drag it. You drag. You're meshoich. Your meshoich means you. When we write today with modern pens, you pull it to where you want it to be with precision. You basically put in ink, small amounts of ink on parchment, and your coolness, it pulls it to where you want it to be. That's not the way we write today with modern instruments. Modern instruments, you're not pulling anything. You put the pen where you want there to be ink. And you just, it's that easy. It's very simple. But that's not the way it's done with a coolness and di. It's a two-step process. You deposit a blob of ink and then you drag it. You pull it, you extend it to exactly where you want to be. That's meshoich. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this chesed. There's a blob of chesed. And meshoich means, now here's what I want to try to suggest to you, is that the chesed exists in this world in an abstract form. And when we ask Hashem, meshoich chastecha, just like when you have ink, and when you write a Sefer Torah, you deposit a collection of ink, which has no form, it's abstract, it's just a blob of wet ink. And then you give it form. How do you give it form? By pulling it. Pulling it here, pulling it there, extending a tag here, a corner here, the kutsa shel yud. All of these things are done by pulling the ink. You take ink and by pulling it, you give something abstract form. This concept is very hard to understand. I don't understand it, but we're looking at the words. So in a chanami, it's towards you. In a chanami, it is towards you. When you're giving something form, it's not necessarily you're pushing it away. You have a blob of ink. So how do you look at that? Do you look at you're pushing the ink in different directions or no? You need there to be ink over here because you need there to be a tag. You need there to be a leg. So you're pulling it towards where you want it to be. I hear what you're saying, Avkam. You're saying is a chakira. There's a chakira in the din of ksiva. The reality is you deposit ink on parchment. You then take the kolmis and you move around the ink. Chakira. How do you view the act of forming the letter? Do you view it as like this, you're pushing it, or do you look at it as you're drawing the ink? The terminology, I think, in Shulchan Aruch and in the Svarim of Sifrei Stam, they use the word Meshoich. They use that word very, very often. That you have to be Moshech the Kaf. Moshech the Kaf Hala. Which I want there to be a leg. I want there to be an arm. So I take the Kulmis and I pull it to where I want it to be. It's not described in terms of pushing the ink away to the location where it wants to be. The Maisa Ksiva is a din of Meshicha, not a din of Dechia. Yeah, Reb Chol, what were you saying, Reb Chol?
Yeah, except that you can't say it's pulling, Hashem is going to pull Chesed toward you. So that's why he translates it here as extend your Chesed to the other.
Okay, that's what he says over there, extend. But we have a right here in this room, for the moments that we're here, is to say, is that no, Meshoich Hastechol Yodecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is within all of us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the neshama, everyone's neshama is a chelik me'elokai mimal. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we say Meshoich, you can say, we're not just expanding, Hashem, this is a very abstract concept. There is an abstraction in the world called Chesed. And we ask Hashem to take that Chesed and give it tzura, give it form. There are very good people in this. Yeah, we ask Hashem to help us to do that. But there are people today that are very good. They have some very, very good nature. They're just kulu toif. But when the day is over, when their life is over, what are you going to say about them? You're going to say, oh, they were good, wholesome people. That's not a halavai. But you want more. Mark, you can't be satisfied with just a little bit of abstractions. You want that they should say at the end of the person's life, you know what he did? Here's a telephone book. You bring to a funeral a telephone book and you say, he did this, he did this, he did this, he did this, he did this.
Is that so, the idea of the Hesped? To say every...
No, Hesped, that's a very big topic of discussion. What is the purpose of a Hesped? I went to Rabbi Bronstein's Levaya. It was almost 2 hours. So he mentioned, incidentally, one of his children is that he was very sick for a very, very long time. And obviously, from what they were saying by the Levaya, they were saying that he spoke about his funeral. He spoke a lot about dying. And he told his child, one of his children, that I don't want a hesped. I don't want any hesped. So the son said, he told his father, but you know, dad, probably called him dad, I don't know what he called him. He said, whatever he called, he says, you know, at the Levaya, your grandchildren are going to be there. And at Kenai Nahara, you know, he had 12 children. And a lot of grandchildren. Your grandchildren, they don't know you like we know you. It would be important for your grandchildren that something should be said. There should be people who eulogize you. So your children, you're right, you know, people look at COVID as a bazillion, okay? People who are honored at dinners, yeshiva dinners, not all of them, but many of them will tell you, I never in my life suffered such humiliation. Okay, they look at it as a kapara for their averis, to be honored at a yeshiva dinner. Many of these people, the last thing in the world they need is to be in the newspapers and all these newspapers with these pictures of them and have a dinner and people get up there and say all these crazy things which they feel is total nonsense and does not do them justice. Only Adarav just ruins the whole image of what they really think of themselves. But you know, the yeshiva needs the money and someone's got to be a carbon. And their Rebbe or the Rosh Hashiva says, you don't have a choice. Just brace yourself. It's a kapara. It's not a joke. I know someone in Chaim Berlin, so they honored him at a koilel dinner. They have two dinners. They have the yeshiva dinner, which is a big, big, fancy dinner. And then they have like a Lava Malka type of dinner for the koilel. They make plenty of money by the koilel dinner. They make plenty of money. They have a journal. They do, who knows? They make even more because they don't have all the expenses. You know what goes on in the dinner? They make it in the dining room. And they were honoring this person. I could not for the life of me believe it, that he accepted that he accepted. Like, this person is the last person in the world that would accept to be honored by a dinner, a yeshiva dinner. And basically, I asked his children, basically, the Rosh Hashiva said to him, we're not even asking you. So we'll warn you that, you know, there's going to be mailings, and there's going to be this, and you're going to be expected to get up. We don't even want to have a conversation. We need the money, and it's your turn. It's your turn to go al Kiddush Hashem. And that's, you know, that's really what it is. I know there are people who are egomaniacs that they love this. They mamish, oh, they're waiting their whole life until, you know, they'll be off. There are people, I'm not denying that fact, but many people. So they told him, you know, you don't have grandchildren there. And no, it's important. So he thought about it, and he said, so they said by the Levi, he says, okay, you're right. It's my duty to go al Kiddush Hashem for my grandchildren. My grandchildren, you're right. You know, there's something there. There's something to me. Today, no, tell you, I said, Rav Pam's Levaya. I was by the Levaya. There were no Hespedim. There were no Hespedim. They said a Mizmor of Tehillim. The whole thing was over in 10 minutes. The whole thing was 10 minutes. That was the whole Levaya. I thought it was a letdown. I thought, you know, by some of these people who give at Tzava, no Hespedim, they don't listen. They don't listen. They call up other Rosh Yeshivas and they say, he gave it Tzava, no Hespedim. So they'll usually say, well, he has no right to do that. He's not the property, he doesn't own himself, he's the property of Klal Yisrael. And, you know, okay, so you, the Maspidim should be memayet in saying about personal elements about the person's life, his personal piety. But to talk about who he was for Klal Yisrael, he's not private property. Once you take a position in a public institution and you interact and engage with larger society, you took a check, you have a salary, you work for an institution, that's part of the job. You're part of the cloud. You don't have a right to go and decide that by your funeral there will be no eulogies. It's important. It's important for Klal Yisrael to give kavod. There's a lot to learn from the Levi. It really is. I remember Rav Moshe, the Levi. You remember Rav Yaakov. My earliest memories, you know, these are watershed moments for young people, children, especially children. Yeah. I remember when I was in eighth grade, Rav Moshe died, Rav Yaakov died. So Rav Moshe died, the yeshiva didn't take us, but Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, it was a big thing. Okay, for me, it was a very big thing. I was a little kid, didn't really go to a Levi like this before. And the yeshiva, you know, it was a big thing. You know, they scare you in the yeshiva. You know, a good yeshiva, they'll do. They don't have a good yeshiva, so, you know, okay, you know. It's a learning opportunity. It's a very important learning opportunity to take all the kids, put them on a bus, and have the Rebbe, your darsh, and you know, that's what you do. That's what chinuch is all about. Okay, you get older, it's obviously, you know, it takes on a whole different flavor. But it's important, it's a very important thing. So how do we get into this over here? We got into this over here. B'shoy chaschel liyodecha. Oh, levayis, hespedim. What do you do? So, okay, what do you do by hespedim? If you are going to be masbid, you basically show the person's unique tzura. Every person has a tzura. You're not just, oh, he was a good person. He was a tzaddik. What does that mean, a tzaddik? That's an abstract term. Draw, paint a portrait of the person. When you make a portrait, you describe unique characteristics and elements. That is tzura. That's called mishoy chastech. Oh, he's a bal chesed. Explain to me, what does that mean? Chesed is an abstract term. When you explain the unique nature of this fellow, that is called being mishoich. It's like when you're writing a letter in a Sefer Torah, you deposit ink on the parchment, you take the kulmis, and you moishech es hakav hola. You pull the line in this direction to get the ink to where you want it to be. And after you do this 10 times and you get the ink exactly where you want it to be, now you step back and you look at it. What do you see? I see a letter, a distinct letter. Ah, now there is tzur. There is kindness. And we ask Hashem, Hashem, don't just be kind. Details. The devil is in the detail. Give the kindness that you are bestowing a unique form, a unique surah, where it has so much more meaning than just abstractness. This is a very important word, mishaykh. Before I turn into an ice house, see, the reason why it's so cold here, for technical information, this air conditioner over here, it gives air conditioning to hit the back half of the Beis Medrash. And there are sensors in the Beis Medrash which control the air conditioning here. So it's obviously not even. That's a very big problem with all air conditioning units. So it's really going, the temperature that it says is 69 is really there in that room. But in this room, it's more like 65, because it's not, the sensors are not in this room. The sensors are in the other room. We're just, we're just the second class citizens over here in the back room, the air conditioner. That's why it's not all accurate. All right. So in any event, this is a very powerful expression. I really mishoich chastecha liyodeecha v'tzedkascha liyishrelev. I'm assuming that the word mishoich, the word Mashiach goes on both. We repeat words very often, and the word Mashiach is meant to be repeated in reference to the word Tzidkoska. Tzidkoska li yishrei lev, to those who have an upright heart. Let's do the next two psukim. Al tivoyeni regel gava. We're going to see the Rashi. Rashi is an incredible Rashi over here. That, how do you take the word tivoyeni? The word tivoyeni obviously is really the word tavo. Tavo elai. Tavo, or is it tavo elai or tavo imi? That's an afkamin in the Mefarshim. See, that appears to be a difference in the commentaries. Does it mean tavo elai? It should not come to me. Hashem, don't bring me people that are nudges, people that are not deserving of chesed, or troublemakers. Don't bring me wicked people, or it means should not come together with me. You know, when you sit on the airplane for 12 hours, it makes a very big difference who you're sitting next to. You have a little kid who the whole day is banging and hitting you on an airplane, it's not so much fun. You're sitting next to an apikores, who, you know, it's not so much fun. You're sitting next to a person who has an antagonistic person, not so much fun. You're sitting next to a woman, well, it depends. If she's not married, you're not married, maybe Hashem is sending you a message. And if she's a married woman, then you're in a lot of trouble, right? Okay? So it all depends who you're sitting next to. I told you this. I once had a friend who went to a wedding in Los Angeles. A wedding in California. So I booked already a crazy ticket. I don't have any money to pay for this. So I booked a connecting flight. You know, a connecting flight to go to here. Cheap, real basement bargain. Basement bargain, last minute ticket when you go from here to here to here to here. I figured the day already is going to be a waste. So it'll take me another 2-3 hours. It'll be an adventure. Maybe I think I ought to connect twice. It was a real bargain. I wanted to go to the wedding because I'm friendly with this person. This is a couple of years ago. I was in the share here then. And I booked the ticket, and then someone said, are you going to the wedding? I say, how are you going? He says, no, you're not going that way. He says, I'm giving you a cancel your ticket. I'm getting you a ticket, and he gave me a JetBlue. What's it called? It's called Economy Plus. Okay, good tickets, right? Economy Plus, and it was in the front of the plane, and it was like, you know, three seats, but it was a little bit nicer. So he thought he was doing me a favor, right? He thought he was doing me a favor by putting me, giving this, paying, it seems like he didn't really pay for the ticket either, because he has points with his company. He told me, you can't even imagine how many points we have to get rid of. And that's what he claims. And I believe him, because from what I've seen, what he's doing, he says, whatever. So he thought he was doing me a favor. And he was. He did me a very big favor. It was a very nice thing, very nice, especially going back. It was a machaya. But going there, I was sitting pretty much in the section where wealthy people sit. And I didn't belong there. So who do I sit next to? I was sitting next to, you know, a couple. Like, you know, the type of people that you would expect to be here in the Kaila. And I don't know who he was, with his wife. I kept my mouth shut, and I was so tired. I wanted to just to go to sleep or to read something. And this guy comes on out, he sits down, he looks at me, he sees a yeshiva bacham, and he's totally not from, but as soon he starts telling me that, you know, his grandparents were Shomer Shabbos. And he grew up, you know, his parents were totally not religious, and all of a sudden the guilt, the Jewish guilt, started pouring out. And he did not give me peace. How long is it, like a 6-hour flight?
Yeah.
He did not let up. And this person, after listening to him for a fair, is phenomenally wealthy. Phenomenally wealthy. He shows me he collects antique cars. And he has garages of them in all over the country. If I was, you know, antique cars, oh, it's in this garage in Minnesota, in this garage in South Carolina, in this garage in Los Angeles. Whoa! And then he shows that he just went, what's when you jump out of an airplane? What's it called?
Parachuting.
And he points to his wife. She's so light, his wife, she almost flew away. I almost lost her. And I know these things aren't cheap. These things cost a lot of money. This guy, if I was, you know, a collector, it would have been a field day for me, right? If I was a collector, but I don't know how to collect. I'm not a good fundraiser. If I was a fundraiser,
you'd be surprised.
If I was a fundraiser, I could have milked him out for who knows how much. But he did not let up and was talking. And it was all like this. He sees a frum guy, and like he remembers his grandparents. And here he is, he has mamish, nothing to do with himself. He has all this money. And obviously he's missing some Yiddishkeit. He's missing something. And you see how much pain he's in. You mamish see it, you know? And he's just letting it out. And he needs to talk to me and talk. You know, if I got on this plane for 6 hours to go to sleep, I need to get some sleep. I didn't get on this plane to talk to you. I don't want to be nasty because, you know, I'm a Chal Hashem, you know. I have to, you know, be on my best behavior. So my friend thought he's doing me a favor by upgrading me to Economy Plus, when to me, I didn't look at it as a favor. I mean, obviously it was, no question about it. And you know, I had a very nice conversation. I gave him a present. I had a book with me, a very good book with me, and it was spooky, because everything it said in that book paralleled his life, and I wrote an inscription to him on the plane, and I gave it to him, to my friend in the sky, and I told him, the next time you come to Brooklyn, call me, we're going out to lunch. He never called. It's been a few years. I thought he would call, he never called, but who knows, I might one day yet meet up with him. So you never know, but when you think you're doing someone a chesed, okay, obviously this was an incredible experience in the chesed. But at the time, I said to myself, what did my friend do? He puts me in a section with these very wealthy people who just want to talk and talk to you and talk to you. They want to talk. I don't want to talk. I want to go to sleep. If I was sitting on in the back of the plane, who would look at me? I would just go to sleep. I would have menucha. So when you're doing someone a chesed, you really have to ask, are you really doing them a chesed? Is this really a chesed for this person? It's a chesed, just because you like it. You like this. I don't like this. There are people, they love to have these parties, these elaborate parties, they have all these crazy things, and they think they're doing you the biggest chesed, they give you a free ticket. I'm not interested in traveling 2 hours to get there, wasting a whole night there, with people that I have nothing in common with, and then going back, coming back 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, and then being tired the whole next day. You love it. Yeah, for you, it's a wonderful experience. But not everyone shares what you consider to be entertainment. Okay, everyone is different. So you have to give chesed, to do chesed, not what you consider what you enjoy. You have to study the specimen. What does he consider to be? To what does he enjoy? A lot of people, he said very often, people they think that whatever they like, someone else is like. Okay, many times it's taka true, but not everyone. It's not always the case.
On a mundane level, sometimes you see a person carrying bags, and you want to help them, and they get like, no, don't help, and you gotta walk away.
You have to know what they consider what means something. What means to you does not necessarily mean something to them. Everyone is different. Look, you can acquire some luxuries in life. No one's gonna. You never know. Al tivayeni. So over here, al tivayeni regal. So what was I saying? I was saying that I'm going to Los Angeles, and who am I going with? I'm going together with a person that, sitting there for 6 hours, I'm traveling together with a person that I don't want to be with, because he's bothering me. He's a nudge. He's bothering me. I want to go to sleep. So over here, Rashi says it in a little more graphic terms, but the word tiv or any means, do not allow someone who I don't enjoy their company to accompany me. Regel, with the regel of gava, with a person who is arrogant. David is the epitome of humility, and David says, it's not going to be pleasant for me to go into Gan Eden together with a person who is arrogant. We'll see them first in a moment. The Yadri Shoim, the hand of the wicked, Al Tinideni. Tinideni, here in this context, the Mitsuda is a hard word to translate. Tinideni means to cause me to wander. No vinod. No vinod, Hashem says to Kayin. You're going to be a wanderer. No vinod. No, who said it?
Yebaretz.
You're going to wander. Nod. Do not allow the hand of the wicked to cause me to wander. Okay, he doesn't say to push me away, but to cause me to wander. That needs to be defined more accurately what that means. Pasuk Yud Gimel.
They shouldn't influence him.
Not influence. Doesn't say that. V'yad Rishoim, the hand of the Risha, al tinideni, should not cause me to wander. That's really the story of the Jewish people in Golis. For the last 1,953 years, what have the Jews been doing? They've been wanderers. They've been expelled from every single country in this world. They've gone from one country to the next. They've been wandering around the world, wandering from place to place. Who is doing this to us? The wicked. The wicked are expelling us from their countries. They don't want us. They don't like us.
Erwin made a point of saying this is our Jews have wanderlust, and what we run out of territory. Hawaii was the end of going west. We ran out of land. So, the goal has got to be over soon.
Well, it's not. I don't think we have wanderlust. Do Jews really want to travel so much, or is it we've been forced? Wanderlust means you have the Yetzirah. People, there are people that love to travel. They just love it. They love to go and check out the whole world. They love it. But then there are people that don't like to travel. We have no choice. We have been against our will expelled. We have been told to leave. The goyim are causing us in history to wander from country to country. Okay, sham there, naflu poile of there. Where is there? What is it referring to? In the place of WW is saying is where they come to attack us, and that's where they will fall. Why specifically there? We have to see the Mefarshim. Shamdir Naflu Poile Oven will fall. Naflu fell. The practitioners of evil. Dohu. Is it Dohu or Dohu? Look, there are two Tamei HaMikra. The Mincha Shai. Is it the Mincha Shai? He has a whole Arichas here. Is it Dohu or is it Dohu? Where do you put the emphasis? Mil'el or Milora? He has two Perushim. I'm sure there's an Afkamina. The lo yachalu kum, and they're not going to be able, they will not be able to stand up. This is the opposite.
The past,
and dohu is the present. What's dohu? That's the present. Right. Ha ba or Baal.
There are two more.
Tamei HaMikra. The Tamei HaMikra is the most powerful. Dochu, so there are two different Tamei HaMikra. So Dochu, Rav Kalman is saying, good. Verifka Baal. Vihinei Baal. Is it Lashana HaBaal B'Rishalayim or Lashana HaBaal? So there, Lashana HaBaal means the next year. Lashana HaBaal, the year that has already come in the present, this year. How do you say that? Lashana HaBaal B'Rishalayim or Lashana HaBaal. Lashana HaBaal. HaBaal is the present, the year that has already arrived, which in essence means this year. Lishana, the year Habo'ah, that has already come. This year we shall be in Jerusalem. And you say Lishana Habo'ah, it's Mil'el, Rivka Bo'ah, she's coming, V'hinei Rivka Bo'ah, she's coming. She's down the road. If I'm not mistaken, when it's Mila'el, it's the future. I've got my Rashi ready. And when it's Mila'ah, it's the present. And in Mamish, one Aliyah, back to back, it's
Ovar and Hoda.
It's Ovar.
Ovar and Hoda.
No, but in Lashana Haba, it's the future.
Yeah, Haba, that's coming. But
that's present. One is...
But Verifka Ba over there is talking about she came.
She came already?
She's coming.
Okay, so I made a mistake then. Lashana HaBa means the year that has already arrived. Lashana HaBa is the one that is coming, the future. Lashana HaBa, if you put the emphasis on the end, I forgot this already, all the time. I have to go back and review. Okay, but standing over here, so L'Choira, that is going to be the difference. L'Choira, the difference over here is, we have to go back to our grammar books, if it's Dohu or Dohu. When David over here is saying Sham der Nafilu, Nafilu is the past tense. They have fallen. But if you look at the Mefarshim over here, they all write. I'm sure I saw it over here. That a lot of the grammar here in Navi is off. You can't bring a raya because we're dealing with prophecy. In prophecy, the future has already happened. The past is the present. There's a lot of breaking of the rules. In when you're dealing over here, when David over here obviously is discussing over here what's going to be with our enemies in the future, it's not just, even in David's lifetime, he's dealing with what's going to be in the future of his own lifetime. So David is a Navi, so you can't bring any proof from the grammar in Nach very often. You can't hold it accountable because since over here can be interpreted many times in reference to the future, the past, the present, And in prophecy, these rules are all intermingled because prophecy in the world of spirituality, hoya, hoya, yeah, it's all the same. So you can't really dwell upon. They're both. Elu v'elu. Okay, both empty. Okay, watch. Okay, let's see over here. Let's go back and over here. Take a look over here. Okay, we did over here three psukim. Let's run through three very quickly. Let me see the stuff. Let me see the stuff in the pasuk get aleph. Liyoy de'echa lahayoydim oyischa lahamin b'cha. David is being mispalel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should extend kindness to those that have faith in Hashem. The Mitzudas David learns the word liyoy de'echa is a synonym for emuna. Emuna, that's a very interesting idea to appreciate that. And what do I mean? Is people always, how do you get emunah? How does a person acquire faith? Person is in a difficult situation, have faith in God. What does that mean? Faith, what? Just magic? Magic, have faith in God? So the Mitzvah stuff over here gives us a very fascinating insight in what is emunah. Emunah means to know Hashem. How do you know Hashem? Well, if you learn Nach, you learn Chumash, you learn Torah, you get to know Hashem. You get to learn Hashem's rules, how He operates. You learn about how Hashem dealt with the people of Sodom. You learned how He dealt with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, how He dealt with Adam and Chava, and with the Ovis, and with the Shvatim. You learn about all of the Nevi'im. The more you learn, the more you get to know Hashem. You know, you have a CIA, you have a file on someone. Someone call, you want to give a job, you want to know, who is this person? You Google him. You go, you Google him, you go, you see his interest, you go to his face page, his Facebook page, and you go look what he posts on Instagram. You get a portrait. Who is this person? What are his rules of engagement? What are his interests? What are his hobbies? Oh, I now know who you are. I know who you are. Now we can have a conversation and I can deal with you. The Mitzvah Stam is teaching us a very profound concept. Emuna. They're always screaming to Emuna. Live with Emuna. Volume number 7. Living with Emuna. Okay, what is Emuna? What is Emuna? What is this? The Mitzvah Stam, it says, Emuna means understand Hashem, who he is, his rules of engagement, how he operates, what are Hashem's hobbies, how does Hashem run this world? The more you understand Hashem, the more faith you will have, the more relaxed you will be, and the agam, you will not have daiga, you will not be worried. That's an important insight. Emuna means study Hashem, learn Torah. That will give you the Emuna. Okay, that's not something you just take for granted. That's a very hard learn to pass over here. To those that have faith. And faith obviously is synonymous with understanding Hashem. Pasuk Yudbeis, Al Tivoeni. Now he learns the Mitzvah stuff, this is going to be not like Rashi. It's very important to emphasize what we're learning now. Al tivoeini, al tovoi a lie. Hashem, protect me. Do not allow to come knocking on my door people that I don't like, people that are evil. Al tivoeini, al tovoi a lie. Regel, the feet, anshe gaiva, lehotzer li, that will cause me pain. The harishoyim, next part of the pasuk, lo yinadidu oisi mi mokoimi biyot chazak, to force me out. Like someone I know, he hired someone. You know, he had an opening for a job. Opening. So resumes come in. This person, he owns the company. True story. Owns the company, and he has an opening for a very high position job. He needs someone with a lot of experience, a lot of skill. And resumes start flying in, and he interviews people, and he selects a certain candidate. Fast forward 5 years later, this person has created in the company of a movement to oust the person who hired him, to throw him out. And to a degree, he succeeded. So here, look what happened in the sequence. I put up a posting, we're looking to hire someone for a job. So, siyata d'shmaya, 50 resumes. If that person happened to be on vacation that day, he would never even see the posting, he would never apply for the job. Hashkocha pratis, he saw the posting, he applied for the job, he came down for an interview. I was fooled, I liked him, I gave him the job. And now 5 years later, the person is a monster, and he forces me to wander. He forced me out. He created, he took over the company and got on the board, and he convinced everyone on the board that they should remove from the board this person. And now I'm the one who has to wander out in the world to go look for a new job. So life would have been much better if I never hired this person. But this person was so charismatic. Lo lidei nisayon v'lo lidei bizayon. If only he didn't come into the office, if only he never sent me his resume, I never would have known about him, I never would have hired him, I never would have all this trouble today. So David here is saying, you need siyata d'shmaya in life, Hashem, don't let people that you know the future, that will cause me grief, don't let them even walk into the room. Because once they walk into the room, and we hire them, and we get to know them, who knows? Someone, Ezra told me a story. Ezra Fried, he told me a story in FedEx. Was it someone else? I don't remember who it was. Maybe it wasn't him. Is where they hired a person, and the person turned out to be a disaster. Total disaster. So they fired him. It was a woman. They fired him. The next few days later, they get a notice that the company is being sued because they fired a person due to age discrimination. Total nonsense. Age discrimination. Because she was very upset she was fired, so she went to a lawyer. So what billable can we make up? What can we make up? How old are you? Oh, you're 67 years old. That means you're significantly older than everyone else in the company. Great, we have a lawsuit. Age discrimination. So what is the line of defense? Age discrimination? We knew how old you are. We hired you. We hired you. What did we... So no, I don't know the detail, but I don't know the exact details. The counter argument was, when you hired me, it was in the middle of Corona. I was wearing a mask, so you didn't know what I looked like. And now, when Corona, the rules, the regulations lightened up, and people took off their masks, you see that I'm old, so you fired me. So the company went to their lawyer, and they went to seek a solution. And the company, they said, you know something? You're going to lose. You might as well settle with her and give her $1 million and swallow $1 million, because you know something? The system is so crazy, you're going to lose. You're going to lose. You're going to lose $5 million. You hear what goes on in this world? So what would have been the mazel for this person, for the company, that this Meshugana should never have walked in the door? Because now that they walked in the door and we hired them, we have to deal with this headache. And we're the ones that are being persecuted. So this Meshugana, who's Mamish Arasha, incompetent person who fooled everyone, took the job, and now was released because they couldn't do the job. The chutzpah to sue over age, like out of your mind, and yet the system is so corrupt where, that's right, they're going to win. It'll be cheaper for you just to settle with her and give her a crazy amount of money than for you to go to court and drag this out over a long period of time and ruin the company's reputation. And anyway, at the end of the day, she'll probably win and have to pay even more money. You hear what goes on? So the bracha for this company would have been Al tivoy eini regel gaiva mitzu beis David Shaloi Al tovoy elai. Halavai, this candidate never walked in the door. Because now that the candidate walked into the door, look what the result is. We are the ones now that have to wander from lawyer to lawyer, from court to court, to find someone to give us an eitzah what to do. Lamali letzara hazois. Halavai, we would have nipped it in the bud by having siyata deshmaya, that the person never walked in the door. Don't bring to me problematic people who will ultimately destroy you. Hashem knows the future. You need siyata deshmaya, like in shidduchim. I mean, this is an example of shidduchim. Person, okay, 99% of marriages are blissful and work out very, very well. 99.9. But sometimes, okay, you can't really judge. It's not a nice thing to say. Because shidduchim have their own unique hashkocha pratis. It's min hashamayim. So I take that back. Strike that from the record. Strike it, because shidduchim have their own. It's a whole different word. You really can never say that about Hashem. You can't really say that. It's not proper. Hashkocha pratis. Unique hashem. Isha l'ish. So you can't say that. Strike it from the record.
How much God did say this
situation. Oh, you don't know there. That's the Nes Nista. But David over here is being mispalel, Hashem, take care of us. We don't know what's good for us. We don't know the future. We don't know how things play out. We don't know the dynamics of what triggers a sequence of events. Hashem sees the future in front of us. Hashem is the grand chess master of this world. Hashem sees the interaction of all of the pieces on the board. He sees a million moves ahead. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes all the calculations just so that everything should work out in the proper time and place. And sometimes we're not deserving that we should get a good outcome. But if we're mispalel, tefillah before the tzara, Avram Avinu, when he came to Ai, Avraham Avinu, he saw how many, it was a thousand years before, he saw that in this Makom there would be a battle. And it says in Rashi, Chazal, that if Avraham Avinu would not have been mispalel at that moment, when he saw just an empty piece of land, he went to Ai. What did he see? He saw an empty piece of land and he saw Piruach HaKodesh. In the future, on this territory, there's going to be a city of Canaanim and the Jewish people. They're going to come, they're going to cross the Yarden, they're going to go to battle. And in this location, the people of Ai are going to wipe out the entire Klal Yisrael. There will not be even one survivor. That's what he saw, Piruach HaKodesh. That was what was meant to be. And Avraham Avinu, he stopped, and he was mispalel. And if not for him being mispalel in advance, that's what would have happened. And he canceled the Gezerah in advance. Like over here, Dov is being mispalel. I see the future. Who knows what could happen in the future? Nip it in the bud. The sequence of events should never go into motion where this will result in a korban. Okay, next words of the Mitzvah is David. Pasuk Yud Gimel, the next pasuk. Sham naflu b'mokam asher yavou lohatzer li, in the place where my enemies come to cause me pain. Sham naflu v'yiyu dichuyim miblikum. They can no longer stand up. You want to eliminate the enemies on the spot. When the enemy comes to bother you, what's the use of having a ceasefire? Go back home. Enemy comes. And he sees that he's going to, so he goes back home. Yeah, he just goes back home to prepare to fight another day. Eliminate him. Eliminate the enemy. David over here is a very strong person. Doesn't suffer fools lightly. Eliminate your enemy. You have this in the Torah all over again. This week's parasha as well. In the Torah is Hashem told the, get rid of the Canaanim. Don't have rachmanis on them. Litzininim be'einechem. If you don't get rid of them now, there'll be thorns in your eyes for the rest of your existence. Agag, what was the whole mindset with Shaul? That Rachmanis, innocent women and children. Hashem told you to eliminate them entirely, although in your eyes they seem to be innocent people. If Hashem gave you a command, have no Rachmanis, Hashem knows what he's talking about. Hashem knows the future, Hashem knows what these people are capable of doing, and the place Shom, right then and there. Don't wait. You have an opportunity in life. Take it. Take it, because if you don't take it, you have an enemy, and the enemy comes to you. Don't let him go. Don't release him. Because if you release him, he'll just come back later with give you more Agmas Nefesh. Shom, he comes to me to battle me. Right here on the spot, we're going to eliminate you. You should not come back and fight again. Sham nafalu, in the past tense, nevua, poale oven, dohu, velo yochelu kum. They shall be completely pushed away from this world without the ability to resurrect themselves, to restore themselves, and make more trouble. Let's see Rashi. Rashi is very different. Rashi learns this psukim kedarka more midrashic, more a sublime approach. Al tivoy eini regel gava, al tovoy eini. See this? This is a major difference, a world of a difference. It's not just a world of a difference in pshat. It's in translation, grammar, in understanding the rules of grammar. Okay, we have kava. This is not a usual form of the word. Al tivoy eini, tovo elai. That's what the Mitzvah David says. Al tovo elai. Rashi says, no, that's not grammar in my book. My book of grammar says, al tovoi imi, together with me, not towards me, with me. Regel horisham halalu be'es kibul sochor liyois chelkom im hatzadikim. Now that is a very mystical concept. I mean, you talk about Kabbalah, strange things in Chazal, this is on the top of the list. Because we have no idea what this means. We have no idea what it means reward in the next world. No one understands what that means. What does it mean, reward in the next world? Reward in this world. Ganeidid olam haba tchias ha-mesim. So if you want to talk in abstract terms, what do you care? What do you care? You go and you get, now is the time for reward. We're going to give you a beautiful, beautiful house in paradise. You come there, you park your car, and they give you the keys to your new hovermobile, and you fly to, like in the Jetsons, you fly to your new palace, in paradise. Now your smart home, and then yes, who are the neighbors? Who are my neighbors? Mm-hmm. Isn't that important to know who your neighbors are?
Absolutely.
So, on one side there's the mayor. And on the other side is you. You're my neighbor. I remember you in my earthly existence. You were a wicked person. You were a Russia. How did you get here? How did you get here? What are you doing over here? Prior to this Russia, how did you get here? So I don't know, the guy says some convoluted excuse. Hashem told me I can be here at least, you know, for a couple of months. To pay off some good deed that I did. Before I go to Gehenim, Hashem is giving me a good experience in paradise. So that means I have to tolerate you as my neighbor for 6 months until you go to Gehenim? So a guy, yeah, you do. Too bad for you. What's it to you? What's it to me? I don't want such neighbors. Oy l'rasha, oy l'shcheinai. Even in Gan Eden, who says that a principle only applies? Who says that principle? I'm talking fantasy world here, right? Because I don't know what I'm talking about. Because I don't think anyone knows that anyone. I'm just making up words here because I don't think anyone we know can explain to you what this means because no one knows what we're talking about.
This idea is so strange.
Didn't I say that? Didn't I say it's on the top of the strangeness?
If we believe in reward and punishment, then what are we?
What are they doing there? What are they doing there? What are they doing there in the first place? Maybe you'll say that's their Gehenim. Their Gehenim is to live next to me. Oh no, this guy! I thought we got rid of this guy. Maybe their Gehenim is to be near this person, right? They can't tolerate that. But for me it's also Gehenim. No, it's not. You're a nice guy. It's not such Gehenim for you. David says, no. I acknowledge. I don't know what I'm talking about here. I don't know what this means. I don't think I know anyone I don't have on speed dial anyone that I can call up that I trust can explain this to me. Maybe you have someone here on speed dial that you can call up to explain this to you. We don't know what this means, what it means, reward. We don't know how can it be that, what is the Russia doing there to begin with? And if the Russia is there, so who cares? What do you care? So let the Russia. You're in Gan Eden. It's an Olam Ha'emes. What's going on over here? There are too many questions. But Uram Aminim, B'nei Aminim, it says here, Al Tovoi Imi, it shall not come together with me, Regel Horishoim Halalu, Be'ez Kibul Sochar. When the time of reward comes, Lios Chelkam Imat Sadikim. Maybe you want to say that we're dealing over here with the flight. We're just dealing with the 12-hour flight to Eretz Yisrael. I don't want to sit next to a person that I cannot deal with.
I'm sorry, but how did they get past security?
What does this mean? Does this mean the journey, but not the actual settlement? Or does this mean where you're settling? What does this mean? You can ask the million questions the whole day like me, and we're not going to get answers. But it's a pshat in the pasuk. Al tivo eini. It should not come, may the wicked travel together with me to the makom where we receive our reward. Why not? What do you care? You sit in your cubicle, and he sits in his cubicle. What's bothering you? What's going on over here? There's obviously... So he's saying things rub off, right? Obviously...
The whole parsha this week, I mean, not the whole parsha, but Anovi Shekha, how could it be? How did God allow that to happen in the first place? The Gemara has a whole sugya on that, right?
Ki minaseh Elokim eschem. Ki minaseh, so whatever this means, we have to accept. It's Rashi is quoting very esoteric Mamari Chazal. Now, the favorite part of the day is we go to Michal Miller to tell us the meaning of the old French word. Lashon Chelek, what does it mean, Chelek? What does that mean?
Also, it's very... In other words, if I understand correctly, it means that they should not have a part,
a chelek, a portion.
Hand out the reward.
They should not get a chelek when they hand out the reward. They should not get a portion of reward, a slice of the cake. Okay, when they cut the birthday cake, don't give them a slice. Don't even give them the cherry. Give them nothing. I don't want this person. Oh, so this is very dangerous because, you know, you talk about Nechinich Abanim, this explosive, where this goes on all the time in Lakewood, is where this happens all the time, where parents, they send their kids to school, yeshiva, and they find that who is in their child's class? This child. And this child comes from a home where they have unfiltered internet, and they have scooters, and they have a swimming pool, and they have very expensive clothing. So the parent says, you know, I didn't come to Lakewood and be moiser nefesh and live in poverty to live a life of Torah so that my children should be influenced every day with other children who don't live my lifestyle. And they say to the principal, if you don't get rid of their kids, I'm taking out my kids. And the principal says, no, your kids are good kids. We need your kids here in this school. Don't take out your kids. Well, I'm threatening you. If you don't take out these kids, they don't belong in this school. They don't belong. So this goes on all the time. All the time, they're fighting. And it's not so simple. There's always another side to the story. Unfortunately, many of us hear one side of the story, and we like very much just to blame, just to go and put the blame on either the people that are too religious, the people that are not, whatever it is. We like very often to blame one side, but when you hear about the stories and you study them in detail, you know it's not so simple. There are two sides to the story. And a lot of these cases, these celebrities that end up being a big, big fuss, it's interesting. It's not what you think it is. There's, like I told someone, there's always two sides to the story. Someone says, no. There's at least three. At least three sides to the story. Make no mistake. I know someone that deals with some of these things. He says, people think they write away in these newspapers and they say in shul, the bunch of you really have, when you see from the inside, it's very, very complicated. There are a lot of things that you're not allowed in Limodia. There's a lot of Lashon Hara, damaging information that cannot be revealed publicly, which is part of the equation. And if you were sitting in the driver's seat, you wouldn't just be shooting from the hip and saying, guilty, guilty, guilty. It's nothing in life is so simple. Okay, nothing in life is so simple. So this is, so who says, Rav Kalmi or Mark, I don't know who it says, is over here, it's very serious. It's over here, it's Gan Eden, Ibn Ezra, we think over here in the basement. I don't want in the basement, Rish! This Eisvarf. Why not? The argument, this is a very powerful argument, they always argue is, why are you so afraid that the child, the weaker child, is going to bring down the stronger child? Just the opposite. You should have confidence in your child that he'll bring up. He will bring up the weaker child. What's this attitude all about? That's always the counter argument. Not so pashut, okay? Every kid, don't generalize. But over here, you know, this source material over here. There's some very dangerous source material over here. That Tzaddik over here says, Gan Eden, Beis Medrash, the Beis HaKnesses. You're letting this guy come into shul? No way. Who gives you the right to say no way? He also has a neshama. He also needs to daven. He also needs to grow. Adarabah, you'll be a mashpia. And you'll have a tremendous pleasure, tremendous hanah in helping him, to raising and helping elevate. A lot of the people from previous years would say that the greatest success of many of the yeshivas in the past generations was diversity. The diversity, and to learn tolerance, and to people grew and saw other different types of lifestyles. When everyone, it's a cookie cutter, every single person in the class, the zelbezach, everyone in the class, their parents are in koil. And everyone's mother doesn't work, and everyone's family is being supported by their grandparents. It's not a healthy thing, right? It's not healthy. the little diversity goes a long way in shaping a person's frame of mind and attitude in understanding this world in Avodas Hashem. And over here it says Al Tavoy Imi Regel Shem. Ibn Ezra says Al Tavoy. What he says over here Atam Al Derech Yishkaven Kilo Amas Shaloi Shaloi Yischabru Imoi BeBeis Hashem. Rav Kalman pointed out the Ibn Ezra in the Beis Medrash. Unbelievable. Next Rashi, the Yad Reshaim Al Tnideni Mimikoimi BeBoy Lirash Mishneh. And this is another very, very esoteric Maimer Chazal. I'll give you a little bit of a Hagdama, which Rav Dessler said that he dwelt upon what I'm about to tell you his whole life, and he doesn't understand. Rav Elio Dessler was recognized as being the Rav Chaim Soloveitchik on Divrei Agoda. What Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was to Divrei Halacha, the ability to break it down into its parts and plumb the depth of reason to understand a halachic sugya, Rav Eliyahu Dessler had a reputation as being the Rav Chaim Soloveitchik on Divrei Agoda. And there's a very popular agoda that the Chofetz Chaim quotes often, and that is if a person speaks lashon hara about his friend, he will be shocked to learn that all of the person's mitzvahs are transferred to him. And all of his averos are transferred, all of the averos of the victim are transferred to the Baal Lashar. It's like the elections. All of my votes go to you, and your votes go to me. And Michal, you like that one? The votes on live television, on live, how come no one ever answered that question? On live television, it flipped. How did that happen on live television, the votes? Did anyone ever explain that? No, it's not, you're not allowed to ask, you get censored if you even ask the question. How do you explain it? But it says in Chazal, such a thing, that if a person speaks Lashon Hara, all of your mitzvahs are transferred electronically to the victim.
And I've heard of this, but the thing is, it's so rampant that there must be an awful lot of crossing.
Rabbi Elio Dessler said that he thought about this to try to understand what this means his entire life. And he delved into the depth of these concepts. And at the end of the day, he doesn't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. Basically, it doesn't make any sense. And we should not take it literally. And we have a moon in Chazal that it means what it means. But it goes against the grain of everything that we know. And it is, at the end of the day, a tzoruch in godol ad ma'od of what this means. Now here in this Rashi, he's basically quoting that Chazal. He's quoting this in different words, it's a different Chazal. And what it says over here is, V'yad Rishim al t'nidin, now push me away from me from my place, bivoi lirash, when I come to inherit mishneh, a double portion. In the next world, not only does the tzaddik get a lot, he gets a double lot. He gets a permit to expand his property to the next property, to take over double. Why? Because who was supposed to live in that property? A Rasha. And by the Rasha doing Averois, he forfeited his Chelek. So where does that Chelek go? It goes to the Tzaddik. So the Tzaddik gets his portion plus a bonus, a double portion. The portion of the wicked. Now the question is why? That's not the way the world works. That's not MS. First of all, who says that reward is divided into portions? This whole concept. What does that mean exactly?
Do you say that since they don't get a slice of the pie, that there's more pie for you?
Yeah, what does that mean? What is that? That's a concept in this world. There's a certain a limit.
Which we don't accept it.
There's a limit of reward. There's a limit. There's a pie. There's a pie, and it's going to be equally distributed amongst all the tzaddikim. So the more tzaddikim, the more tzaddikim, the less everyone gets. The less tzaddikim, the more you get.
Maybe it's the bigger the pie.
What does that mean? Maybe the pie gets bigger. Just get a bigger oven. Make a bigger pie. What's going on over here? What does this mean? No, we don't know what this means, but we have to accept it. And over here, it says over here is that the tzaddik, he gets his portion plus the portion that the wicked are losing. Kol Yisrael yesh l'chelik l'olam haba. Except for those who give it up. And those who give it up, it goes to the tzaddikim. Lech Mishneh, Lirash Mishneh, es chelki v'es chelkoi. Batoiva. In their land, the tzaddikim will inherit double. What's the double? The double is the portion of the rasha. So over here, the David says, I don't want one day to get a knock on the door from the rasha and say, you know, you're living in my house. In other words, when it comes time to get reward, so David saying the tzaddik gets his house. And then, because the Rasha is in Gehenim, so he gets a house in Florida. Another house. The house that was supposed to go to the Rasha. So the tzaddik says, listen, the guy is in Gehenim. He's out. So we have an empty house. So you could take it for yourself also. Okay, very good. And then you're living, going vacationing in Florida, and you get a knock on the door. And who's there? The Rasha is there. You're in my house. What do you mean? I thought you were locked up. You were locked up in Gehenim. How did you get out of Gehenim? What? I got out. Alcatraz. I got out. I escaped. Get out of my house. So David is saying, Hashem, don't let that happen. I don't want to get a knock on the door from the Rasha and saying, you know, you're a squatter. Do we understand this? I don't understand this, okay? I don't, but that's what Rashi says. Rashi says, this is what it means. David, Sham Naflu Pali Oven, Dochu, they should be pushed away, these wicked people, for good. There is no escape. No escape from purgatory. Al Tinidani, they should not be able, Sham Naflu Pali Oven, Dochu, Vulo Yochlukum, they should not be able. Well, that was the previous part. They should not cause me to wander. I don't want to ever have it here where the Rasha comes and he knocks on the door and he says, get out, you're a squatter. And I have to now pack up my belongings and leave his property. I don't want that to happen. They should be locked up for good. And the last pasuk, Sham Yovinu, Bimapaltam, there they should understand their defeat. Visham Doichu Vlo Yachlukum. Now this is a very profound concept. Okay, who won World War II? Depends who you ask. Right? Every war is like that. You go, I don't have all the examples, but shocked to learn that in countries that we think have been defeated, they celebrate that they won the war. All the different wars of the world. People, they live in a fantasy world. In a fantasy world. You can show them the facts. Show them the facts. Don't confuse me with the facts. In my mind, we were victorious. We won the war. You won the war, you're all dead. You're in exile. No, we won the war. When people are living in a world of fantasy, there's no one to talk to. And they'll always come back to torment you and to cause you pain. The ultimate way to win a war is when the enemy acknowledges that they lost. That's the ultimate victory. The ultimate victory in any battle is for the loser to acknowledge Yavinu Bimapaltam. Okay, we don't live like that in this one. In our world that we live in, we don't care what the loser thinks. You can think whatever you want to think. Who cares? The bottom line is, we won. We have possession. We have control of the territory. We have control of the assets. It's ours. That's not winning. That's really not winning, because as long as those people think that they won, and they live in an imaginary world they'll always cause you trouble. They'll always come back and make outrageous claims and do outrageous things and behave in an irrational manner that will cause grief and suffering to the rest of the world. There has to be a point in time where the people acknowledge, Yavinu, they were wrong. They were wrong. You're right, we made a mistake. We sincerely acknowledge we made a mistake. It was an error on our part, and we have been defeated. That's powerful stuff. And it's almost non-existent in this world. People who lose will say, listen, they just temporarily overpowered us. But we will be back because we're really right. We really won. Maybe they are. Who knows? Maybe sometimes. But I'm talking about it in a very idealistic concepts is where there's a battle against truth and falsehood. And a battle of MS and Sheker. And the Sheker is Yovinu. You're right, it's Sheker. Wow, that's success. That's true success. And this whole concept, everything is so idealistic, it's even hard to even find an example, because many times you see in the world people win, they don't really represent MS. They're also Sheker. Everything today is a Taruvis. Can someone explain to me who's right and who's wrong in Ukraine and Russia? I mean, obviously Russia seems to be more on the side of vicious, of aggression, but if the more you study what's going on in Russia and Ukraine, the more confused you get. Okay, what are they fighting about? Does anyone know what they're fighting about? The United States has given already $50 billion to Ukraine. You know that? How much does America give to the state of Israel for its defense every year? About $5 billion. You know, I used to shake, I used to tzitta about America giving Israel money. Now, you know, Israel, the mamish, they're so beholden to America. You know, don't bite the hand that feeds you. America, they give Israel $5 billion. Can you comprehend what that is, $5 billion? When Corona came along, $20 billion here, $20 billion here, $10 billion here, you know, for COVID, for vaccines, another $10 billion here.
I think it's $5
billion. This billion here, that billion, Pfizer, they make $30 billion here, Moderna makes $20 billion here, $20 billion here. Oh, a Nayatsara, a war, Ukraine and Russia, America, $5 billion here, $10 billion here, $20 billion here. Education, give money for CRT, $5 billion. Oh, America gives Israel $5 billion a year in foreign aid. I no longer shake. I used to shake when I see, you know, you learn all the numbers, what goes on in the Pentagon. You have to know what these numbers actually mean. You know, who says we even know what these numbers mean? What does this mean exactly? I don't know what anything means. But when there's a battle of MS and Sheker, if you can define MS and Sheker, and there's a battle, and MS, when is the battle won? Rashi, profound Rashi, Shom Yovinu Bimapalasam. They have to understand they've been defeated. This concludes Mizmar Lamed Vav. Tomorrow in Yiratz Hashem, we'll begin Mizmar Lamed Zayin. Now we'll take a short break. I want to discuss.